I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a rare win for the good guys as a Thurston County judge temporarily halts a law that would have allowed duly elected sheriffs to be removed from office. Plus, speaking of common sense, the State Court of Appeals seems poised to make a critical ruling on property rights. And a Democratic congresswoman from Washington State floats the idea of exempting law enforcement officers from the income tax. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Right now, we're running our once yearly Undivided promo that gives you 30% off an entire year of Undivided. Just go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Undivided and use the promo code USA30. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Oh my gosh, I love good news. Don't you love starting the show with good news, which is so fleeting on the West Coast? But it turns out we do still have judges in the state of Washington who care about the Constitution and actually want to protect democracy, unlike false claims of protecting democracy. So we teased it on the show yesterday. Four Eastern Washington sheriffs were in a courtroom in Thurston County yesterday arguing against a bill that was set to become law today to take effect that would have allowed duly elected sheriffs to be removed from office by an unelected board of bureaucrats. However, I perhaps share your shock that the Thurston County judge ruled in favor of the sheriffs, temporarily halting that law from taking effect today, and said in her ruling, which was scathing against Democrats who passed the law, that she thought it is potentially unconstitutional. So she's blocked it temporarily, and that's what they sought, an emergency restraining order while this case winds its way through the system. So the judge in question, we'll give her a little applause for doing her job. Judge Christine Schaller, again, Thurston County Superior Court. Here is just a little sampling of what she told the attorneys from the Attorney General's office and Solicitor General Noah Purcell in court yesterday. She said in her ruling, which was about 40 minutes long, it appears that the legislature does not trust the people of the state of Washington to have good judgment. It is a fundamental right to run for elected office and to vote for elected office with very, very few exceptions, she said. The legislature may have exceeded its constitutional authority. Well, I could not agree more. And to us, it seems so obvious. So the law is set, and she said all of this, all the things that all the right wing has been saying about this law and the right wing sheriffs like Keith Swank have been saying about this law. She said, and I don't know what her politics are, and it shouldn't matter. I shouldn't know what her politics are. She's a judge and she should go by the law in the Constitution. But so many things that she said are exactly the criticisms that many of us have had. And so if we're living in a sane place, in a sane reality, this ruling wouldn't be a surprise. But I think in Washington state, where you have one party control that's willing to push laws like this, it is kind of a surprise. But a couple of things she pointed out as well was that this law would have put requirements essentially on candidates for sheriff that the lawmakers who passed it don't even put on themselves. And I love that she pointed that out, the hypocrisy of it. You know, and Noah Purcell, again, the Solicitor General who tried to run for Attorney General but dropped out when Nick Brown decided to run, he's making the argument that, well, these sheriffs, they have a lot of power. They can control basically life or death and lethal force. And it's like, okay, and you don't think that state lawmakers have a lot of power? Look at the laws they've passed that can literally mean life or death. Stopping police from pursuing criminals, letting convicted murderers out of prison early, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's just remarkable, and I'm glad that the judge pointed out the hypocrisy in the law. Keith Swank, who I think everyone sort of understands that maybe this law was built for. He won the election for sheriff in Pierce County. Democrats were very upset by that because they don't like some of his speech that he exercises on social media. So sort of dubbed like the Keith Swank bill. I also think it probably would be used against Adam Fortney if he were to win re-election or election for sheriff in Snohomish County. He's running again. Keith Swank responded to the ruling. He said, "This is a great ruling. The judge explains the points I have been making much better than I do. However, this fight is not over. We must stay vigilant." And I agree, because they're going to appeal this likely to the state Supreme Court. And we know that the state Supreme Court is increasingly made up of friends of the governor and allies of the Democratic Party. And they have shown that they have a track record of not really caring what the Constitution says. And in fact, Keith Swank is having an event tonight that I will be at that seeks to raise awareness for this law and fight back against it. So this is a temporary ruling. Now, I think given the judge, again, the remarks that she made, eventually at the lower court, I believe that the state of Washington will lose this case, but it's what happens in the upper courts that's very concerning. Derek Sanders, who's the Thurston County Sheriff, who, you know, hasn't been a big fan of Keith Swank, you know, nor have I, but he's been very in line with Keith Swank and has had other sheriffs on this particular bill. He said, "I cannot even begin to express how refreshing it was to hear Judge Schaller talk about how important it is for voters to retain their sovereignty and that elected officials do not forfeit their free speech." And I mean, gosh, this would have been so disturbing had it been allowed to go into effect. I think it would have took a matter of weeks before they sought to this unelected board of bureaucrats at the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission before they sought to decertify, probably starting with Keith Swank. And then once they decertified him, they would have sought to remove him from office. And what would that have looked like? I mean, he said that he wouldn't have left. They would have had to march into his office and arrest him, essentially, or remove him from office by force. And I just don't know how that would have went. And remember, he was down in Olympia and he said to lawmakers that thousands of citizens will surround the county city building and they will not allow that to happen. So we were racing towards, I think, what would have been an unfortunate sort of situation. So that's on pause for now. Very good news. We'll continue to follow the case. And we actually, on the legal front, coming up after our next segment, I think that the State Court of Appeals is about to make a very sane ruling on another issue I care a lot about, property rights. So we'll talk about that coming up. But that felt good yesterday. I was like, oh my goodness, I couldn't believe it. It came up, I think, on King 5, and I was like, no, I can't believe King 5. No way that really happened. And I saw it, I just couldn't believe it. So the law we've been railing about for the last several months, on hold for now. There is a hope for common sense. Speaking of law enforcement, this popped up yesterday. And I question her motivations on this. I think Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the Democrat down in the third, she knows that it's going to be a tight race against John Braun, the Republican. And I think she's looking for ways to appeal to Republican voters or independent voters. She put this out. She said, "Thank you so much to the Clark County Sheriff's Office for taking me out for a ride along. It's an honor to get a chance to see what you're up to up against firsthand. In D.C., I'm working to provide tax relief on the first $100,000 of federal income tax for law enforcement. We need to think creatively about how to support law enforcement and first responder health and wellness." Now, look, she has definitely tried to position herself as a moderate since she's been in office because she won a district that was long held by Republicans. Right now in the midterms, it's considered to be one of the top races in the country where Republicans think they can get the seat back. Again, John Braun is the Republican. So when it comes to that, I just have a hard time trusting that she actually cares about law enforcement and really wants to help make sure that we can keep good law enforcement officers in their jobs and recruit new law enforcement officers. I tend to think maybe it's sort of a political tactic. Now, we'll get to my thoughts on the actual policy, which is, hey, should law enforcement officers not have to pay income tax? I mean, they're paid with taxpayer funds, so it's already tax money. We have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. Would that help us retain more officers? Would every other state would have the same policy? We'll discuss it. But I had to laugh at the Seattle Times because there was some mixed reviews on it, right, on social media. But the Seattle Times put this out. "A proposal from a Washington member of Congress to grant special exemptions to federal, state, and local police from paying most income taxes was not well received online." And I don't know. I looked at the responses to her post and it was pretty evenly mixed. I mean, there were some people saying it, supporting it, but it was like the Seattle Times is like, we hate cops.
Pick their favorites.
Pick their favorites. Yes. Mm-hmm. Whatever, however we feel, those are the responses that we're going to read. But how do you guys feel? So we had this in our Daily Show poll, which I'll get to your responses in a second. I don't know. Like, look, I love support our men and women in blue. But where does, how do you decide that you're in a profession that's worthy of not paying income taxes, but you're not? Because what about like firefighters? What about nurses and doctors? And then it goes to teachers. And it's like, I don't know how you pick and choose who should pay an income tax and who shouldn't. Now, I like Donald Trump saying the overtime taxes, alleviating taxes on overtime, because law enforcement works a lot of overtime.
Although,
but we still talked about that, too, as being a questionable thing.
Well, I also heard most cops didn't, that didn't apply to them because they make over the threshold.
Make too much money. Right. Mm-hmm. So I asked you guys in our Daily Show poll, I'm actually sort of surprised by the results here. Maybe not. Should federal, state, and local law enforcement officers be exempt from paying income taxes? Nicole, yes or no?
I'm going to say no.
I got to say no, too. No. You know what? So I think if this was her effort to appeal to Republicans who like love back the blue, I think it falls flat because 92% of our subscribers who lean conservative say no.
I'm guessing there are some cops in there that agree. That's
kind of like, yes, I do. Yeah, they're probably the 8% who said yes are law enforcement officers who watch this show. Tiffany said, I voted no, but only because it would only be a matter of time before teachers should be exempt. And then politicians should be exempt. Yeah, then they'd exempt themselves from income taxes, right? Rick says, I think all seniors above 70 who don't have a job and are retired should be exempt from taxation. I definitely think there's a lot of taxation that seniors should be exempt from.
Which
we've talked
Trump
about
did.
Property taxes. Yeah, from their Social Security. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was common sense anyway. It's already...
It makes no sense. Jake says, I voted no because everyone needs to pay their fair share, in quotes. I think that's sarcasm. If I have to pay an income tax, so should they. However, I'd like to see an income tax be abolished entirely. Yeah, I would like to see, I always say this, it's not that I want to see the wealthy tax less, it's that I want all of us to be taxed less.
Yes.
Everyone should pay less taxes.
Stop wasting our money.
Stop wasting.
If we're showing that it went to a good cause, I'd be fine. But.
Yes, 100%. So I'm sorry, Marie Glusenkamp Perez, if you thought, I appreciate the support for law enforcement, even if it's touch and go. But if this was an effort to appeal to Republican voters in a tough midterm election, I don't think that this is going to quite
nice
do
try.
It. All right. I mentioned I have another shockingly sane, and the ruling hasn't happened yet, but based on the what happened in the state court of appeals, I feel like they're poised to make what could be an insanely important ruling on property rights. We'll discuss it coming up next. First, speaking of property, if you're thinking of selling yours, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at Sell. I need to do a montage of all my best segues into our ad reads. Can you work on that?
You should. Thanks.
Okay, great. She's like, you should. I'm not going to, but you definitely can. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes has been working with a lot of Undivided viewers and listeners who are trying to leave the state, which always makes me sad. But at the same time, if you are going to flee the state, use one of our advertisers. That will make me less sad. Wes and his team have a stellar track record in this market for many years. Jim says, we packed our bags and hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. He also said a giant shout out to Abby on his team for her incredible support, unwavering dedication, and tireless effort. He said, together, they turned our long-distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. I love, love, love to hear that. So if you'd like to go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes, go to his website, sellwithwes.com. You can take a look at some of the recent listings that they've been able to sell for clients. And right now, I'd recommend starting with a free market analysis from Wes and his team, because there are more homes going on the market here. Gee, I wonder why, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson. I wonder why that's happening. But when there's more homes on the market, obviously that changes calculations a little bit for how long it might take to sell or what you might be able to get for your home, all the basic stuff that you understand. But Wes can give you a great market analysis to set your expectations. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really is a better way to sell your home. All right, for this segment, we've got to go back to 2024 to a story we covered on this show. And I was fascinated by it at the time. So there was a lawsuit filed in October of 2024. Again, we discussed it, but I'll give you all a reminder. And it had to do with a building in downtown Seattle called the Addison that was being used as affordable housing. And they sued the city of Seattle, basically accusing Seattle of a regulatory taking, saying, you put so many regulations on us as a housing provider, you know, who we could rent to, how we could screen tenants, evictions, all of this stuff, that that amounted to a regulatory taking of our property for your own purposes. And they had the, you know, I thought, ample evidence to be able to show the impact on a timeline that all of these housing ordinances, not only from the city of Seattle, but the state of Washington combined, had on their bottom line. I mean, they went from cash flow positive, and then as more, you know, as fair chance housing ordinance, roommate ordinance, eviction moratorium, 180-day rent increase, and then it went to capping late fees. And as all of them stacked up, all of a sudden they were cash flow negative. And not only that, I mentioned, and they mentioned in the lawsuit against the city of Seattle, that the inability to screen properly for tenants led to, shocker, a bunch of bad tenants who beat up the units, left them in a state of disrepair, were in there using drugs, not paying rent, and it scared away the tenants that were there that actually needed affordable housing and were going to try to get back on their feet. They're like, oh my gosh, this place has turned into a crap hole. I'm not going to live here. So they were at like a 45% vacancy rate, and their units were being run into the ground. And so at the time, they filed this lawsuit against the city of Seattle, and a King County judge ruled against them. So as lawsuits do, they take a long time with appeals. Well, they wound up last week in front of the state court of appeals. And the state court of appeals, I will say, because I went to the state court of appeals for them to hear my public records case against the city of Seattle that a King County judge had ruled against us on. And we sit in there in the state court of appeals, and I immediately was like, wow, they're smart. These appellate judges are very smart. But also, I knew after that hearing that we'd won our case, and the state court of appeals eventually ruled unanimously in our favor. And watching this case before the state court of appeals, I feel the same way. I was like, no way that the GRE downtowner, which owned and operated the Addison, loses this case in the state court of appeals. So the GRE attorney stepped up and detailed for the three judges all the losses that they faced.
Rent collections plummeted from roughly 93% to below 45%. Bad debt shot up from roughly $40,000 per year to over $500,000 in 2022 alone. Security and maintenance costs almost quintupled. What was once a viable, affordable housing complex now loses over $2.7 million per year.
Yeah, and the judges had some tough questions for the attorney for GRE Downtowner, but the really tough questions came when the attorney for the city of Seattle got up there. And, you know, the issue here is you can have, as a government, you can pass regulations. But I think the central issue is, when do those regulations become so burdensome, so onerous, that you can't operate your own property in a way that's sustainable? And so those are really the questions that were presented to the attorney for the city of Seattle.
The case law is settled and it's clear. We cite over a dozen recent examples.
Sure, but there's always an outlier. I mean, we've got a situation here where we got, not only do we have COVID, which of course happened, but we've got six regulations passed within a short time period. I mean, that's an outlier all by itself. And then you can't cite a case that has anything near that level of regulation.
Well, so, Your Honor, I can't find a case that has actually challenged any more than maybe two regulations. So
yeah, that's a point,
this
bro.
Is really more a function of how unique this.
This is a unique situation. I mean, this is a situation that is, you know, arguably could go well beyond any investment-backed expectation. Can't it go too far? What if the policy behind it actually is backfiring?
Again,
what if the regulation is indeed actually driving away housing?
Right. The character factor doesn't assess whether it's a good regulation or a bad regulation. It looks at what is the type of regulation that we have here. You don't have to agree that it struck the right balance. You don't have to agree that it actually promotes the common good. All you have to do is determine that that was the goal, and that is the nature of the regulation.
How crazy is that? That is literally an attorney for the city of Seattle arguing that, oh, it doesn't matter if the whole point of the policy totally backfired and our efforts to promote affordable housing actually is costing us affordable housing. That doesn't matter at all. The point is we have a right to regulate these housing providers into oblivion. Is that not insane? How can you stand up there and make that argument with a straight face? And I think the most significant question, so telling, that one of the judges asked is, again, about this. Okay, is there a point, though, where it's overregulated?
Is there a point at which there could just be too many ordinances? Like here we have six. Let's say there's 25, 50, 150. Is there some point that number matters?
Not to this, to this case, Your Honor. It might matter to the City Council, and perhaps the City Council will be looking and readjusting what it's done with landlord-tenant regulations. But here, no.
No. She asks, what if there's 50 regulations? He says, doesn't matter. The City of Seattle's honest-to-God argument is that they can pass as many regulations as they want against landlords, and it will never, never amount to a regulatory taking of your property. That is their honest to God argument. And you can tell the Court of Appeals isn't buying it. And they say this is a total outlier. Six policies, six regulations, combine COVID with all of that. So I know it'll take months to get to a ruling. And look, crazy things can happen. But watching it, I love watching these. Watching it, you can kind of tell. They're not buying it. So what is the potential implications here? Because if you now have the owners of the Addison that can prove that the City of Seattle de facto took their property for their own purposes, think of how many buildings could make the same argument. Think of how many landlords could make the same argument. So Sean Flynn, who's with the Rental Housing Association, and in full transparency, they are an advertiser with this show, but RHA is helping with this lawsuit. And he was in the courtroom that day, and I asked him how he felt leaving the courtroom after the arguments.
It felt really good coming out of the hearing. They asked a lot of hard-nosed questions to the city attorney, who, to his credit, stuck to his theory. And his theory is that effectively the government in a landlord-tenant context, the government cannot effectuate a regulatory taking ever under any circumstances. There's two cases that underpin this. One is called Cedar Point, and the other one is called Yee. And Yee stands for this concept that and the government cannot effectuate a regulatory taking in a landlord-tenant context because they're merely addressing the relationship between the tenants and the landlords, not that they could ever take your property, which I just think is not that can't be the law. And then on the other hand, there's Cedar Point, and Cedar Point stands for the fact that you can regulatorily take a property, but that is a little bit outside of the landlord-tenant context. So you've got these two federal cases dueling, so the jurisprudence just isn't clear on it. And that's one of the things we work here at RHA with great folks like the Goodman folks to help bring suits like this forward so we can get better law on the books, both at the federal level and in this case on the state level.
Yeah, and it would be a tremendous precedent, especially in a state like ours, where these regulations are so common and so burdensome. And he says that this could, as I thought, open the door for other property owners to bring similar suits.
If they rule in our favor, what they're saying is that these suits are allowed to move forward. Now, not to belabor the boring details of the case, but this case at the Superior Court level was dismissed very early. It was dismissed on what's called a 12B6 motion, which is a failure to state a claim that you can do, right? So what we're challenging is even the ability to get into the courtroom on these matters, right? And so and the case law currently sits, it doesn't help us, right? And what it says is that that it's possible to close the court doors to landlords on these issues. And we think that's wrong. We think that these sort of cases are very fact specific, and we should be allowed to use the courts to bring these suits.
Yeah. And what's the remedy here, right? Because the damage is done to a building like the Addison. And so what, overturning the laws, well, I think that needs to be done, at least certainly some of them. That doesn't make buildings that have already suffered through this whole again. And so one of the interesting things here is they're not even challenging the laws, he says. They want the City of Seattle, since you regulatory You took our property via regulatory means. You need to pay us for it.
In this lawsuit, we're not asking the government to remove the laws. In fact, we're saying, look, okay, you did these things. And you had the right to pass each one of these individually. Mm-hmm. But when you did, and it all came together in that big stack of regulatory gross pancakes that we have to eat, we can't get through them all. And thus, you've taken my property. And so what that means is you have to pay me for it. Yeah, you can pass these things. But if you pass them in a way that takes private individuals' property and uses it for the public good, you've got to compensate them for that, because it's not fair that a single individual carry the economic burden of a benefit that the legislature has decided should be got for society generally.
Crazy. And that could break the city of Seattle. If all of these landlords could make the argument that these rules and regulations were so burdensome, you de facto took our property from us, we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars. And they would have really no choice at that point but to scale back some of these ordinances, which would be good for the city of Seattle, obviously. It would be good for housing. But that argument is crazy. And I almost hope that attorney for the city, I don't know him personally, I almost hope he doesn't really believe what he's selling. He just has to say it because he's trying to give his client, the city of Seattle, the best possible defense. But for him to stand up there and say, oh, no, there's no amount of regulation that would be too much regulations. We can pass as many regulations as we want, is absolutely insane. So I think I'll make a prediction that this is going to go in favor of common sense and sanity in the state court of appeals. The city of Seattle will likely appeal it to the state Supreme Court if that happens, but we will let you know. I anticipate it taking a couple months, but those arguments gave me another injection of excitement that there is still some hope for the state of Washington. Coming up next, poor Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson. I put out that little clip of her yesterday, and she is being absolutely bodied online. It's not a good day. I would advise you, Mayor Wilson, just not to log on to the internet today. That would probably be for the best. We'll talk a little bit about it coming up next. First, while most investors are focused on AI, crypto, tech, the real story right now at this moment is happening elsewhere, energy. It's a story our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital knows well. And the question is your current financial advisor underestimating energy's impact on your portfolio? If you're concerned about how energy, I mean, what's happening in Iran, can impact your retirement, wouldn't it be smart to get a second opinion? You can with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast, and we'll have a new episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham tomorrow. And he's like, oh, told you so. Off, totally indignant because he was right about the oil prices, and I think they shot to like 118 a barrel or something. So I'll give him that because I was a little skeptical when he was saying how bad it was going to get, but he was right. He was right. So I'll have to give him that. Don't tell him I said that. Don't. I'll never let a man know.
I think you were more hopeful.
Sure. I was hopeful. Don't let a man know I said they were right, even if it's Zach. Let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. All right, so we aired this clip exclusively that we obtained from yesterday on the show from Socialist Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson at an event, basically laughing off the reality that a lot of businesses and wealth are fleeing the city and the state.
I think the claims that millionaires are going to leave our state are like super overblown. And if, you know, the ones that leave, like, bye.
And she is now the laughingstock of like the entire internet. And look, I mean, it's and some people are comparing her to a Valley Girl, because play it again. I didn't notice how many times she says like. I say
I
like
think
a
the
lot
claims that millionaires are going to leave
mayor.
Our state are like super overblown.
Super overblown.
And if, you know, the ones that leave, like bye.
Bye.
It's
just unserious, right? I mean, she is a deeply unserious person to lead a major U.S. city. And I think that's sort of the consensus of many people online right now. I mean, I saw gosh, everyone from politicians to business leaders and executives reposting that, being like, what did Seattle do? And I mean, it's not a surprise. And I think the leading candidate for mayor in LA is a socialist. And I mean, New York City is led by a socialist. So we might laugh at it on the internet, but clearly there's something they're doing that's working in these major cities that help them keep getting reelected. But just the cavalier nature, not a surprise that she's being so roundly criticized. But I mean, this is what, like, this is what we're dealing with across the board in Washington State. I mean, she might be a socialist and she might be a very unserious person, but you have people who aren't socialists, you know, have qualifications for the job that they're holding, but are equally as unserious, and they deserve just as much criticism. You know, sorry, Brad Smith at Microsoft, the president of Microsoft, he was on, Cuomo did recently a piece, I think it was earlier this week, you know, talking about some of this anti-business sentiment in Washington, talking about the Capitol flight, and they re-upped a clip of an interview they did with Brad Smith in 2025. This is a year ago. This is before the income tax on millionaires even passed. Here's what he said.
I'm probably more worried right now about the business climate in Washington than at any point over the last 30 years. But let's be mindful. If other people are paying for jobs to leave and we're taxing them to stay, that will make everything harder.
And that's a sane thing to say. I'm more concerned, right? That's a sane understanding of how it works. Like, Starbucks is leaving because in Seattle, we tax high-paying jobs and they're going to Tennessee where they get a tax credit for high-paying jobs. And he's saying he's more concerned at any point than 30 years. And so on its face, that's a very sane thing. It sounds like a serious person. No, because his donations tell another story. We've criticized him for this before. He is donating to the campaigns of the Democrats who are doing this stuff. Not only did he donate to them in 2025, weeks before, he said that on Cuomo News. He was donating to Democrats, to Bob Ferguson. And he has maxed out for not only just Bob Ferguson, but Nick Brown for the 2028 election. Meaning he's maxed out his contributions for an election that's happening in 3 years. Four years. Wow, really took me a minute to do the math there. 2 years. 2 years. Sorry. 2 years. As I talk about unserious people. 2 years. When he was saying last year that he's more worried about the business climate in this state than he's ever been worried about it before, even before Bob Ferguson went on to pass an income tax on wealth. But he's already maxing out to put Bob Ferguson back in office and to put Nick Brown back in office. That's an unserious person. So we've got the Seattle mayor, unserious. We've got business executives who could be huge tools in the fight for common sense and sanity, unserious. And we also have, to top it all off, a deeply unserious, qualified, sure, but unserious governor. He was on with Cuomo's Chris Daniels. Chris does great work. I really, as critical as I am of mainstream news, I think Chris Daniels at Cuomo does great work. He caught up with Bob recently about all of this, about all this news, all these people saying they're going to leave the state. And of course, Bob has to find someone to blame.
Starbucks, Meta, Amazon, Microsoft, all cutting jobs in Washington State. Are you concerned about the business climate right now?
Of course. Yet Ferguson blames AI more than a tax for recent events. A lot of states would love to have our problems in a certain way, but everybody's feeling the impacts of AI and changes that are going on for sure.
Interesting. Everyone is. Everyone is. Then why is Washington State the state that's all over the headlines, the state that has one of the lowest bond ratings, the state that is losing the most jobs? If it's, oh, it's impacting everyone. No, it's not. No, it's not. And if you're really concerned about AI, okay, you could say, well, AI, let's make sure that we have that sector covered. Because if we're going to lose these sorts of tech jobs, at least we can get jobs and infrastructure and stuff. And AI, I know you're scaring the AI people away too. We had on the head of an AI company who said he's leaving. So these people can't, they're unserious. It doesn't matter if you're Bob Ferguson and you've got a law degree from, where has he got a law degree from? Harvard, whatever it is. And you were the attorney general for all those years and now you're the governor and you are on paper qualified. He's a deeply unserious man. He is just as unserious as the 40-something socialist mayor of Seattle whose mommy and daddy was bankrolling her life up to the point where she got a lush taxpayer job paying her, what, $300,000 a year. And she laughs off. Of course, she laughs off the rich people. Bye. Because she doesn't know what it's like to work hard for what you have. She doesn't know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck. So it's just absolutely, utterly insane. And then you got Brad Smith, who should be a serious person at the table, deeply unserious, saying one thing, doing another, and hoping what? People don't notice? People don't put the pieces together? One other thing on the unserious front, before we get to Florida Report, the mask thing, right? So in California, on the mask ban issue, the state of California passed a ban on masks because, oh, we hate ICE. We hate ICE. And thank God the Ninth Circuit decided to reverse it, which should have an impact on our mask ban here. Because what did Bob Ferguson say on the unserious front? The most important bill he passed all session was banning ICE agents from wearing masks when it's not even a bill that can become law because of the supremacy clause. And I'm just so annoyed because now the Trump administration is suing New Jersey. Well, what about us? And I get it. They probably think, well, the Ninth Circuit ruling in California will cover Washington's. So they're probably like, we don't have to go after Washington on its own. I don't care, okay? Everyone else gets a little part of the action. Mm-hmm. Maine, even. Maine, who cares about Maine? Trump administration suing New Jersey over law limiting masks for cops and ICE agents. It says the U.S. Department of Justice sued New Jersey over their state law, very similar to ours. The federal government argued the law, which also requires officers to identify themselves before detaining or arresting someone, improperly seeks to regulate the actions of federal officials. They say New Jersey lacks the legal authority to regulate the federal government at all, much less through a law targeted at core governmental functions such as law enforcement. And they'll win because they won in California in the Ninth Circuit. And because, yeah, you can't do that. These were feel-good laws, virtue signaling, passed by Democrats. I just don't know what we have to do, President Donald Trump, mm-hmm. for you to pay attention to us over
Show
here.
Show us some love.
Show us some love and come in and fix things here. We would love that. It's just very frustrating. All right, before we get to Florida Report, a whole bunch of you have taken the First Mark Challenge with our friends at First Mark Insurance. And why wouldn't you? It's free and you could end up saving a bunch of money on your insurance. Mike and I just saved a couple thousand on our renewal this year, which was a pleasant and unexpected surprise. And you can use First Mark Insurance for your home or your business. I use them for both. I love it. I just have had such remarkable, fantastic customer service with them and a great experience. FirstMarkInsurance.com, like Robin, Carol, Debbie, Connie, all undivided viewers who've taken the challenge. Robin's saving $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. Think of how many gallons of gas you can buy with that. Not as much as you once could, but a lot of gallons of gas. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. And with that, it is Thursday after all. So let's leave the insanity of Washington State behind and see what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So the redistricting wars continue now in Florida. So if we take a look at the maps, and this is DeSantis's redistricting plan that has passed in Florida. Obviously, legal challenges will come swiftly, but it would net the GOP 4 additional seats. I've been clear. I'm not a huge fan of the redistricting wars because it's like red state does it, blue state does it, red state does it, blue state does it. So regardless of what other sort of rationale they have, but is there an excuse they're giving for this beyond this gives us more Republican seats?
Yeah, there's a couple. I think they're kind of leaning mainly on the decision the Supreme Court just made about race-based districts.
Okay.
There are a few districts in Florida that when you understand the geography and the type of people that live in certain areas, it seems like the old map actually was drawn based on certain types of people in certain types
gotcha.
Of areas.
Okay.
So they're using that as a way to say the new map is actually more race neutral than the last map was. So that is the first and strongest reason they're pushing this through so quickly.
What's interesting about that, though, is now Democrats are claiming that actually the new map has a race-based district in the Miami area that they say is like putting all the Cubans who vote red because, you know, they know socialism bad. And so they're saying, well, actually, you know, you're creating race-based districts with Cubans.
Yeah. So the funny thing about this is this actually affects my district that I live in now in my new house. So before this map, I would have been in District 28. Now I'm in District 27. 27 is a notoriously swing district. And now that they've moved this line of this district west, it encompasses a huge number of neighborhoods that are predominantly Cuban people, which would basically solidify this district as a red district in the future.
But also down there, you can't get away from Cubans. And I don't say that in a derogatory way, but I mean, you could draw any number of maps and it's going to be predominantly Cuban.
It could, but this district in particular was pretty much just downtown Miami until now. So now that they pulled that west, I mean, you're getting people that are born and raised in Miami and not just a bunch of transplants, which is probably why this district was pretty back and forth so often.
Yeah. So House Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries targeted DeSantis's efforts in Florida. Here's what he had to say.
Our message to Florida Republicans is F around and find out. If they go down the road of a DeSantis dummy-mander, the Florida Republicans are going to find themselves in the same situation as Texas Republicans who are on the run right now.
Yeah, except then the Supreme Court said, oh, no, what happened in Texas is just fine, because that was before that ruling happened. So here's DeSantis responding several days later.
We're going to do maximum warfare against Republicans. Florida Republicans, you F around, you're going to find out all this stuff. And, you know, what I said was, listen. And he's like, oh, if you do the redistricting, we're going to take out all your members. We're going to do all this stuff. And what I said was, go ahead, make my day. You don't think we're going to. You want to come down here and spend money and in Florida, roll the dice and take your chances. But don't think that you can come down here, issue threats to us, and somehow you're going to make us flinch. That is not happening. And in fact, it did not happen, because as soon as he came out and started doing that last week, Florida legislature turned around and they passed a new map.
What? And so just so people know, I can't see the clip when I play it for you. I could only hear it. And I thought Nicole played the wrong clip. He actually does a very good Hakeem Jeffries.
He does. He really, I was cracking up listening to that because I was like, wow, he sounds just like him.
Man. So I also want to play this clip just because I think it'll help people in Washington state understand that even Florida has literally bat, you know what, crazy lawmakers. So this is Florida Democratic Representative Angie Nixon screaming and losing her mind during the vote.
By our democracy, this is a violation of the Constitution. It is. It's a violation of the Constitution. I'm out of order, but y'all are doing illegal.
Representative Persons Mullica has waved closed. The question now recurs on final passage of HB 1D. The clerk will unlock the machine and the members will proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
83 yeas, 28 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes. Read the next bill.
None on the desk, Mr. Speaker.
I haven't even seen something that unhinged in our legislature. And they would have gotten in our legislature. I think they probably would have removed her by then. But yeah, that's wild.
That's a little wild. And she might be right. I mean, Florida did pass a constitutional amendment back in 2010 prohibiting certain types of gerrymandering. So that, I think, is going to be part of one of the future legal battles this map will face.
And it'll go through. And again, it's just like, okay, if there's a legal basis to do it, and there's a reason why laws exist to allow for, redistricting in off years that you wouldn't typically go through the redistricting process. But it seems like a lot of what's happening right now is sort of like, let's try to win the midterms by any means necessary. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. We were going to talk about, let's just talk about it briefly. So the very first direct commercial flight between the U.S. and Venezuela left Miami's airport this week. So we've got video of it happening. So this is, I guess, maybe the beginning of some sort of normalized relations after they seized Maduro. And I don't know if you've been to the airport lately, but last couple times I went, there was like a sign up going through TSA saying, you know, that it was dangerous to travel to Venezuela or whatever it is. So I don't know why the sign specific, because there's a lot of countries it's dangerous. But now, I mean, we've got flights going there, commercial flights. So
yep. So this is the first flight in 7 years. And it was kind of nice. I was watching some interviews online of like family members that are going to be reunited with people they haven't seen since they haven't been allowed to travel. Yeah. I have clients that are now able to renew their passports and things like that. So I think it's just exciting for a huge population in Miami, because we do have a lot of Venezuelans here.
Yeah,
so.
Who, like you said, haven't been able to just go home to, even though it was a mess and maybe they didn't want to, they have family there and all that stuff. They gave me goosebumps just thinking about it, like cut off from family for so long. So that's pretty cool. Thank you, Donald Trump. Don't get credit for anything, but thank you, Donald Trump. All right, our favorite sheriff, Grady Judd, is back with his press conference demonstrations. So they've been trying to ramp up human trafficking and sex trafficking and child abuse investigations there. Yay, no controversy. And you brought this up because I don't remember what the story was. Around Christmas, there was some Santa locally who was caught up in some sort of like child sex thing in Washington. Is that what it was? I think so. So that reminded you of this. Tell me who they caught.
Yeah, so they caught a 68-year-old man amongst 20 other people in this sting. But this guy stood out from the crowd because he is a locally known Santa Claus for the area.
Oh, and he's good. He looks a lot like Santa, too. Are these all three of these him in this picture?
All three are him in that photo. Different times he's played Santa Claus, and he was caught offering money to have sex with a minor, and now he will be charged with human trafficking and other violations.
He sent social media messages to an undercover detective who was posing as a 13-year-old girl's guardian. He told the undercover he'd pay $200 to rape the child. I mean, absolutely disgusting. So, yeah, make sure you know who your local Santa Claus is, for sure. Yeah. And there are some wonderful Santas out there. There are child predators, unfortunately, in all walks of life. But someone whose job it is to let kids sit on their lap, that's pretty disturbing. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore. Santas. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I mean, I hate to say it because there are just really sweet Santa Clauses, but it is a job where you can, like, for sure, like, that is something where kids sit on your lap, you're gonna find pervs, child predators there. Just disgusting stuff. One more national story. So when we started the show yesterday, there was just the Fox News report that said two of the family members who attacked Savannah Hernandez in Minneapolis were being charged federally, but it actually turned out to be three that were indicted by a federal grand jury, which I said on the show yesterday is a total game changer. But we were waiting to see how the feds were able to make the case, because up to this point, feds have been hands-off when it comes to street-level attacks and crimes during rioting, unless like a federal agent is assaulted or some sort of thing like that. And so we now have the indictment. The indictment has been unsealed against Christopher, Page, and Deanna Ostroshko. I mean, a family that FAs together is a family that FOs together. And so the charges are interesting because the first count is interference with a federally protected activity. So they interfered with their First Amendment rights. And that tells me the feds can step in any of these cases. The feds absolutely could step in. And I'm not saying just because it was me, but in the Tequila case where they tried to blind me because they interfered with my federally protected rights. First Amendment rights. That's pretty significant. And then, as far as the father and the daughter, they've been charged with assault is the second count, which makes sense because obviously they assaulted Savannah. The third count, so another count of assault, so a separate incident. And then, let's see, the mother, Deanna, says, did aid and abet the assault of, and aid and abet, abetted by others, assaulted the victims. They say that she aided and abetted her family members in assaulting Savannah and also assaulted Savannah herself. So those are the charges that they're facing. And really bad day for the dad. Remember what I said about the dad? I don't want to have hate in my heart, but I've never wanted to see someone's life ruined so badly. Well, he now, yesterday, same day he was hit with a federal indictment, also got hit with state charges. So it says man charged, this is from the Hennepin County Prosecutor's Office, man charged with fifth degree assault, an incident at the Whipple building. And it specifically refers to him forcefully shoving Savannah headfirst to the ground. They said after review of available evidence, the fifth degree assault charge was determined to be appropriate. They said insufficient evidence led them to decline charges against the other individuals who were part of the incident, which insufficient evidence, my you know what. Savannah, for all of this, says the Hennepin County DA's office has announced they will be filing a misdemeanor charge against Chris Ostrusko. However, due to insufficient evidence, they're declining to bring charges against the other ones. Earlier today, a grand jury found probable cause to bring federal charges against all three of the violent activists and just points out the discrepancy there, that Chris is the only one being charged locally. So I don't know, but I think this is huge news because we already knew the blue jurisdictions are soft on these violent criminals. And so let's let the feds take these cases, and I think that'll have a much more profound impact on some of the violence. Okay, let's get to comments from the live stream, shall we? Okay. Let's see. Ronald, just a chat, $2 saying, I love Undivided. Thank you. Moon Goddess, congratulations to Old Sub Sailor on his first day of retirement. Oh, one of our wonderful viewers' first day of retirement. That is so great.
That's awesome.
I honestly hope you're not watching today. I hope you're out doing something else. I want you to watch in retirement. But first day of retirement, be out enjoying the sun. On the judge blocking the sheriff's decertification law, Crystal says, winning. I'm actually shocked the judge had a brain. You know, we just got to take the wins where we can get them.
You know, I was looking at her kind of record, not record, but okay, looking up some other cases, she seems very common sense.
See, they do exist.
Go figure.
Great. Matthew Cook, if this wasn't about sheriffs that Dems don't like, then how about a board pertaining to all elected officials? Yeah, let's have a board that can remove any of them. I mean, I don't want that either, but... Sherry, I attended the court hearing yesterday regarding the four sheriffs lawsuit. Judge Schaller's ruling was so very detailed and well-formulated. I hope any future lawyers representing other sheriffs will take notes from her statement. On the appellate court hearing the property rights case, Country Guy, the socialists that keep getting elected to the city council need to take a course in basic economics. I agree. Talk about True. Requirements for elected officials. Chuck, is anyone surprised that the socialist city's socialist attorney is not arguing against the socialist government taking property? Chris Elder, the PNW's overregulation is eroding property rights for those who own housing. There is a place to protect both landlords and tenants, but it has to be balanced. The real question is, why are policies being pushed that weaken property rights? Because they think that what belongs to you belongs to them. It's the socialist mm-hmm. way. On the Seattle mayor getting absolutely eviscerated online, I don't give a chuck. This worked on Tuesday, apparently, so I'm going to try to buy some more common sense for our state. Also, sponsoring the boop. Thank you for the $2, $20 super chat. B. Flinch, she made it to the front page of Fox News. Not a good look. Oh, she did? That's what you were trying to tell me during one of our commercials.
Yeah, they picked up our story, but gave us no credit. Whatever. At least it's getting attention.
Interesting. Meso Corny. That's funny. Meso Corny. Miso I said corny. Meso, but it's Miso. Meso Corny. She wants the rich people to leave because she knows the poor people keep her in power. Well, I don't know. Based on Brad Smith, he's rich and he's out there giving money to Bob Ferguson and Nick Brown.
True.
You can ask for it back. Take it back. It bothers me Why? So much. I am so bothered by it.
They do nothing but hurt you.
We'll ask Brad Smith to come on again.
Again, yeah, I'll try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just need to talk to the guy. I need to talk to him. I'm sure he seems like a nice guy. I hear good things about him. Yeah. But you can't say that and put your money... literally not where your mouth is.
I assume it's, again, what we've been told, where they're just trying to, like, by their kindness because they think they're going to get in anyway. Why do you think that?
They never do.
Why do you think
that? It never works. It's so stupid to me. You just got to go scorched earth on these people. It's the only thing they understand. Trump suing New Jersey over the ice mask ban, but not Washington. Shannon says, I'm disgusted how we're being ignored by the federal government. I am too. What did we do? It's because they're like, you are such a lost cause that we can't win any votes there.
That might be true. But yeah. I also think it's just everything on the East Coast. Like, that's all that's in their brains. Those East Coast people, they don't know what's out here on the West Coast. And when they think of the West Coast, they only think of California.
Yeah.
We're just lost over here.
To be fair, California is a pretty big chunk of the West Coast.
I know, but they're not only.
They just think of Bigfoot and space aliens when they think of us. They're like, and lumberjacks. I don't know, guys. I've done my best. All right, Nicole, thank you. Have a good time in Vegas this weekend.
Oh, thank you.
Nicole, always jet setting somewhere. You know what I think we should do? Because I'm jealous. We're going to implement a 5-day work week.
Just so I can't travel as much.
No, I'm kidding. I'm just, you know, I need to do that. I need to do what you do.
You did, actually. Like, I went to Vegas,
and it was great, but you're gone every weekend.
I know. I have good people. They ask me, okay, this is the thing. People ask me to go. I'm a yes person.
Yeah.
You are a yes person. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you're a FOMO person. You're like, you're going. I'm going.
FOMO too, but yes.
But you're good at travel. No, good for you. Yeah. You're seizing FOMO life.
And YOLO. Those are my two mottos, I guess.
Okay, I had to. Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. And let's get to our closing sanity check. Man, I love this. So Spencer Pratt, the one-time reality TV star, is, of course, running for mayor of Los Angeles. And what spurred him into it is his house burnt down in the Palisades during the train wreck wildfires where Mayor Karen Bass was overseas, despite warnings, decided to leave the city. And, of course, Gavin Newsom, just there was no water to be found. And so he's like, yeah, I'm going to run for mayor of L.A. And he's actually been getting a lot of traction. And he just released, I'm sure you've seen this because it's been everywhere, but it's so good we had to close the show with it. He just released a banger of a political ad.
This is where Mayor Bass lives. You notice something? Or here, where Nithya Raman's $3 million mansion sits. They don't have to live in the mess they've created where you live. This is where I live. They let my home burn down. I know what the consequences of failed leadership are. That's why I'm running for mayor. For my sons and the rest of us Angelenos that want to stop these corrupt politicians from destroying our city. We are going to get the golden age of Los Angeles back.
Makes me want to give him money. I want to write a check to Spencer Pratt because that is damn good. Maybe I will. I don't know. He's still behind in the polls to a literal socialist who's called like the L.A. Mamdani. But, you know, I think he's gaining some traction from people who are just absolutely fed up. And that ad says it all. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Reminder, we're running. We only do it once a year. Promo for all. 30% off. Patreon.com/undivided. Unfortunately, I always get messages. If you're already a member, you can't use the promo. Patreon doesn't let us. It's got to be for new members. Patreon.com/undivided. PATREON.com/undivided. And you just type in the promo code USA30. It's available for all of our tiers. Get 30% off the entire year. Support common sense, sanity, state news. Whatever you feel like supporting, we provide it, really. Nicole's looking at me like, Brandy, wrap it up. I was trying to sell it, Nicole. I'm trying to sell subscriptions.
I was also going
to
say, don't forget about the Sunday show.
Tease. And on Sundays with Subscribers, we're going to be talking about the effort from an anti-hunting, anti-fishing cult in Olympia to tear down opportunities for outdoorsmen and women in Washington State. So we'll have that on Sundays with Subscribers coming up. You guys have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the sun. It's going to be hot, hot, hot. Woo. Yes, so wonderful. I'll be at an event with Keith Swank tonight. I'm going to be in Kittitas County on Saturday for a speech. Very much looking forward to it. So I'm going to be bouncing all around the state of Washington. So please say hello to me if you see me out and about. Unless you're a hater, don't say hi to me. I don't want to talk to you. All right. See subscribers on Sunday. I'll see the rest of you on Monday at noon live show here.